Thank you, David. Appreciate that prayer this morning. Good morning, everyone. Open your Bibles to 1 Samuel 27, late 28, start. Let's do it that way. Pretty excited about being here as usual this morning, on the first day of the week to assemble for our Bible study, and of course, in just a little bit of time to worship God and remember our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and his death, burial, and resurrection. And it doesn't matter what the weather is outside. Boy, we can still have joy in our hearts knowing that we have this privilege of assembling with one another for the purpose of encouraging each other and learn more about God's will for our lives. And certainly we can do that when we look back at examples like King Saul and David and the other characters that we've looked at. Plenty of lessons for us to learn. Boy, as I look back at it and think about how we've gone through this, and I have thoroughly enjoyed the way that we've gone about doing it, there are so many other things that we could get out of this book. We could just sort of peel off and say, let's talk about leadership. Let's talk about humility. I mean, there are so many things from this that we can mine for material for future lessons, for sure. Maybe there's some point in the future we go back and look at these 1st and 2nd Samuel from a different perspective, just from, you know, those sort of lessons that we can learn from it. But nevertheless, it's been such a terrific study. And let me do this morning. If you're visiting with us, we want you to know we're so glad you've come our way. Whatever has brought you our way, we're glad that you have a desire like us to be here and open God's word and to assemble on the first day of the week. So we're definitely excited about you being here with us. And I didn't do this last week, my first Sunday being back from our big Wild West trip, but we got to worship in a couple of different spots while we were away. One was Tucumcari, New Mexico. That's a mouthful. There are Christians that assembled there, and they wanted us to know here in Auburn how much they appreciate the work that we're doing here. And they want to remind us that they're doing work out there. And so in our prayers, let's make sure we're mindful of the people that are working in different places and maybe more difficult places than we have here. And then we were in Las Vegas, Nevada, just briefly. And yes, as the preacher there pointed out, the gospel is alive and well in Sin City. They're doing what they can out there to shine the gospel light to those who are lost. And there are a lot of folks lost there, like there are everywhere, and we have an opportunity to collectively, as we work in our individual locations, to further the kingdom's purpose. And so greetings from those brethren there. We expressed our greetings to them on your behalf, but we're certainly grateful that we had an opportunity to meet with the Lord's people while we were away. Let me just say this about chapter 27. And I've said this before, but I appreciate so much those of you that have come to me afterwards recognizing that we just clearly do not have enough time to cover everything we want to cover as far as our thoughts. I know some of you are thinking, what's never stopped you and somebody else's Bible class from speaking up? That deserved a good laugh. And I hope I've made plenty of opportunity. The thing I'd like to remind you is I'm scanning out over the crowd. Sometimes I may not see you put your hand up. I know I see that in some instances, and I try to help the Bible class teacher by pointing someone out and say, hey, he's got a point or she's got a point. So don't let me overlook you if you've got something to say this morning, and I am grateful for all the input that you provided throughout the quarter. But I really appreciate those after-study opportunities to discuss it a little bit more, and I'm glad that there's some interest and sincere interest in the Word of God, that it just doesn't, okay, well, we filled our quota, we went to Bible class, and we're done. There's a real zest and a real zeal to talk about it some more, and man, I commend you for that, and I hope we're always like that. And I really appreciate that input that I've been provided. Chapter 27, I told you I'm a little puzzled. David makes this decision even after there looks like there's some reconciliation, and we can all raise our eyebrows and go, really, with Saul, is there reconciliation? It didn't look like it. In every instance where someone talked sense into Saul, ultimately Saul came back to being Saul, to his heart of jealousy, to being led by fear, I think as Walker pointed out last week. That's where he's motivated now. And we see David make the decision to flee and to go to the land of the Philistines, to the enemy, and to reside there. And we're just scratching our head. At least I'm scratching my head. And I really appreciate some commentary afterwards. I'll be honest with you. My heart wants to look at David and go, there's a plan behind all this. This is his cunning strategy as a warrior. He's going to infiltrate. He's going to make himself feel like he's part of that, only so that later he can turn. That's what I want to think about David, a man after God's own heart. That's what I would want to describe me if I were in this situation. I'm just really struggling to get there with chapter 27, the fact that David, that we see no mention of David inquiring of God, looking for instruction, what should I do? And God sort of revealing to himself, yeah, this is what you should go do. Now, I don't know. Could that have happened? Perhaps. There's been some good conversation input that I've been provided to make me sort of pause and think. And I think it was John and John and Debbie, Jebby as I collectively call them together. I'll tell you, when you get John and Debbie together with some input, you can get some really good stuff. So thank you both for that. Yeah, Jebby. I really liked the comment, John. I liked our discussion that we had. And I really sort of stop and think, you know, is David realizing, look, wherever I've gone, when I went and the priests were slaughtered as a result of my deception and because there are those seeking to harm me and those that are with me, am I bringing calamity? Am I bringing a terrible situation on any who aid and assist me? Likely I am. So is there a desire not to bring that on anybody else? Probably there would be. By going to the enemy, it's not, you know, hey, I'm going to the enemy of Saul. Who cares if he attacks them and gets upset with them? That's what he's supposed to be doing anyway. So I just don't know. And so I'll open it up for any final discussion. Anybody wants to throw in a final thought on that? I just really struggle to figure out where is David right now as far as his walk with God. Is this his low point? We know he's going to have some low points. Is this a really low point for him? Is there something else going on? I really don't know. Final thoughts on that? Anybody? Nobody wants to touch it, huh? Okay, well, we're just going to be satisfied that we don't know, right? But we're going to pick up in, let me just make sure there wasn't any, I think I may have made one last note for chapter 27. And I may have shared this with you. Well, let me just say this. We mentioned the last comment I made about was it doesn't seem like there's any significant span of time, any kind of crisis situation to explain why David's had this sudden change of heart, why he goes to be with the Philistines. You know, I made some notes here. He was confident that God would protect his life. We look at that in chapter 24, verse 15. Abigail basically confirms that to him, states that same thing in 25, verse 29. But David now speaks of his death. Is it certain if he does not flee to the land of the Philistines? We're going to read that in verse, or 27:1, we read that. And it began, now David said to himself. David pleads with Saul that he not be forced to leave the land. But now feels compelled to leave, even though Saul has given him, air quotes, some assurance of safety. And I wrote my final thoughts here on this chapter. David, a man after God's own heart, is revealed to be human, flawed like the rest of us. He lied to Achish about who he and his men are raiding, but now agrees to fight versus Israel. We're going to see that in just a moment. And my final thought here is, wish this was a ploy by David, but it seems he is willing to fight God's people. We're going to address that here in just a moment. And then I've referenced Psalm 34. And let's just look at that really quickly to end chapter 27. Psalm 34, and I specifically looked at verse 8 and verse 22. Again, boy, we can't help but look to the Psalms as we consider David's life. He's so closely intertwined with those. We so greatly benefit from having those Psalms preserved for us. All of those conflicts, all of those trials, all of the things that David went through are similar to the things that we go through in this life. And so when we are challenged, when we're confronted with life's temptations and challenges and just the sorrow of this broken world that we live in, it is so comforting to know that we can go and look and find solace in David's words as he appeals to God and pours his heart out to God in praise to him and adoration for who he is and his providence and his faithfulness. David's able to sort of cleanse his soul a little bit to say, look, I'm going to pour it out in front of you. I'm a broken man. I've sinned against you, and I'm so grateful that you are forgiving and that you have persisted with me. So these Psalms are really incredible, and they're of incredible value to us even now. But Psalm 34, verse 8, thought about these words of David. He says, "Oh, taste and see what the Lord, or see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him." David, a man looking for refuge, never stopped seeking it from God, recognizing that ultimately that's where you're going to find refuge, even when it's difficult to find refuge in this life. And then verse 22, "The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned." So again, I just love the heart of David in writing this. Where he's at, let's pick up in verse 28 and see. So any other final thoughts as we move from chapter 27 to 28? Okay, one other confession, since Walker's in attendance here. Some of you are probably looking at the calendar and going, let's see here, Jimmy. You have this Sunday, and I think next Sunday is it for us, Jared. Is that correct? Okay, so two classes, and I'm on chapter 28. There happen to be, I'm very well acquainted with this now, with the clock ticking. There are 31 chapters in this book. So what it looks like, as you probably have all gathered before today's point in time, is that our brother Walker, in picking up with 2 Samuel, has an option to sort of come back a little bit and finish this off, or he can just say, look, it's Jimmy's fault, he didn't finish it, we're moving on to 2 Samuel. I'll leave that up to him, but personally, I think it'd be a nice little intro here to sort of finish this up and go into. So there's my plug, Walker, I'll leave it to you. All right, let's read chapter 28 together, just for those of you maybe have not acquainted yourself. I have changed my mind about the approach to Bible class, and Troy, I don't know if he's in here this morning with us or not, but he gave me sort of a new standard when he was filling in, I think, for Seth, and he was asking people that was coming in the door, he positioned himself strategically to ask, hey, have you read the material for tonight? And, you know, people were sort of like, maybe not. Always a good idea to read ahead and be ready for the class that you're going to go to. I think Troy was sort of making that point for us. So hopefully you've read chapter 28. If not, we're going to read it together this morning, and you'll be ready to have some discussion with me this morning. So let's read through chapter 28 together, 1 Samuel chapter 28. Now it came about in those days that the Philistines gathered their armed camps for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, know assuredly that you will go out with me in the camp, you and your men. David said to Achish, very well, you shall know what your servant can do. So Achish said to David, very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. And Saul had removed from the land those who were mediums and spiritists. So the Philistines gathered together and came and camped in Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel together, and they camped in Gilboa. And when Saul saw the camp of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. When Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. Then Saul said to his servants, seek for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. Then Saul disguised himself by putting on other clothes and went, he and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night and he said, conjure up for me, please, and bring up for me whom I shall name to you. But the woman said to him, behold, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off those who are mediums and spiritists from the land. Why are you then laying a snare for my life to bring about my death? Saul vowed to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. Then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. The king said to her, do not be afraid, but what do you see? The woman said to Saul, I see a divine being coming up out of the earth. He said to her, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he is wrapped with a robe. And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and did homage. Then Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And Saul answered, I am greatly distressed, for the Philistines are waging war against me, and God has departed from me and no longer answers me, either through prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have called you, that you may make known to me what I should do. Samuel said, why then do you ask me, since the Lord has departed from you and has become your adversary? The Lord has done accordingly as he spoke through me, for the Lord has torn your kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, to David. As you did not obey the Lord and did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, so the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also give over Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. Therefore, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Indeed, the Lord will give over the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. Then Saul immediately fell full length upon the ground, was very afraid because of the words of Samuel. Also there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day and all night. The woman came to Saul and saw that he was terrified and said to him, behold, your maidservant has obeyed you, and I have taken my life in my hand and have listened to your words which you spoke to me. So now also please listen to the voice of your maidservant and let me set a piece of bread before you that you may eat and have strength when you go on your way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. However, his servants together with the woman urged him, and he listened to them. So he arose from the ground and sat on the bed. The woman had a fattened calf in the house, and she quickly slaughtered it. And she took flour, kneaded it, and baked unleavened bread from it. She brought it before Saul and his servants, And they ate, then they arose and went away that night. I don't know about you guys, but I feel no airflow going in this room at all. Am I the only one that's warm this morning? Or I could explain the story behind it. We'll save that for another day. Let's just say I had a Father's Day moment this morning where I had to take care of some responsibilities that a father has to take care of, and maybe I'm just feeling the effects of that right now. So happy Father's Day to you all, by the way. And it's not my own family that we're talking about. It's somebody else's, but. Okay, let me see if I can cool off a little bit here this morning. All right, so you guys tell me. We're into chapter 28, and right out of the gate here, what do we see? What's about to happen here? As usual, these Philistines, what are we dealing with? Yeah, of course. Philistines are always aching for a fight, right? Especially with the Israelites. Let's have this battle. So now David finds himself in a very precarious position, and what is he basically told is going to happen here? What does King Achish make clear to him? In case there was any doubt for David and his men. And the we, John, is everybody that's there. That includes him, right? Again, boy, this goes back to my struggles with chapter 27. Somebody give me an idea of what might be going on here. What might Achish sort of be doing? Okay. Actually, that's how I feel about it. He's testing David a little bit, right? So far, so good. Things have worked. We mentioned David's plan and his request of King Achish has really worked out well for David and his men. It's also worked out for Achish because he hasn't really been draining a resource on them because he's been out sort of taking care and plundering and providing for themselves. Jay, you were going to say something. Yeah, very. I completely agree with you. That looks like what's going on here. What better way to put David and his men to test than to say, hey, look, you've been with us. And how long have they been with them? Does anybody remember?
A year.
Yeah, so what is that? 16 months. I mean, that's a pretty significant period of time. David might argue, haven't I already sort of proven myself to you? I mean, been here all this time. Have I been in any trouble for you? Any reports of me not doing, you know, as I should, based on your grace and your kindness you've extended to me. But certainly there's a test that's going to be put forth here, right? So right out of the gate. And then what's David's response? Any kind of hesitation here? What does David say? Somebody's going to point out to me what David said here. Could be looked at a couple different ways. So somebody do that for me. Okay, that's basically what David says. Hey, look, yeah, and we see Achish respond to that, right, going, hey, look, you pass this test, you be my bodyguard for life. I'm going to give you a position in my kingdom for life. Sounds like a pretty good trade, right? Anybody read David's response differently? Anything else David could be saying? As I'm rereading that last night, John, I'm thinking through that very thing going, what is going through David's mind? What is it that David's saying? Let's read it again. So here's his response. And look at Achish's words in verse 1 here. Know assuredly that you will go out with me in the camp, you and your men. To me, there's a bit of an edge to those instructions, to that command. This isn't up for debate, David. We're not going to have a council here and go, well, you know, this is really an awkward position I'm putting you in. But, hey, this would be a great show of your allegiance to me if you went and did this. There's none of that. This is what you are going to do. Here's the expectation. And David's response, very well, you shall know what your servant can do. That's all David says, which leaves it wide open for interpretation. What is David getting at there? I mean, I know the first time I read through all this, I was just sort of like my mouth dropped open and went, I mean, David, just immediately, there's no sort of, what might we expect David to do here? What could David have done with his response? Yeah, right, Ashley? I mean, now's your opportunity to say, how much wiggle room do I have here? I mean, I've proven my worth. I've got some value. I've got a significant contingent of people with me. We are a considerable force. and we have proven valuable. How much leverage do I have here? Do we see any signs of that? We do not. So what else could be doing here? I mean, back to the statement of you shall know what your servant can do. What could that also mean? That's a great thought, Hannah, if you didn't hear all of that. I mean, maybe David is still counting on God, keeps his response vague, sort of going, God's going to make this all work out. He's going to use me however he elects to use me here. I mean, that's what I want it to be. I think that's what we all want it to be. This is David. This is David, right? This can't be David saying, oh, that's nothing, King Achish. You want me to go fight against my former family? No problem. Let's go do this. I'll show you what I can do. The other thing I think he could be saying here is when he says, I'll show you what I can do, that could mean you're going to see what I can do. It may not necessarily work out for your benefit, right? I may not necessarily do exactly as you have instructed me to do. David. That's a great way to put it right there. Absolutely. It fits with John and I's conversation for sure. And David sort of stole something I was going to reference back to in his comment there, and that is we've already seen how David's reacted with his opportunities to take Saul's life. This has come up again and again. And in every instance, David has basically said, it will not be I who strikes down the Lord's anointed. And so it would be quite the departure if suddenly Achish says, hey, we're going to go to battle with Saul and his forces here. You're going to come along for the ride. You may be matched up against Saul and his sons, which obviously would be quite a struggle for David if he wound up in combat with Jonathan, with the covenant that they had struck with one another. So I think that's a great way of putting it, right? Is we have to go by what we know about David to this point, and so far he's revealed himself to be a man after God's own heart and would not raise his hand against the Lord's anointed. So, Stacy.
Basically to say, just go away in peace.
That comment there reminds me of my note that I have for chapter 29 that has that same issue there. That in that setting, we go back to, well, wait a minute, here's your out. Maybe this is God's providence saying, look, the Philistines, the others, other than Achish, they distrust you. Therefore, they don't want you to be a part of this. And since we're already there, Stacy, and what was the Philistines' distrust of David? What are their thoughts likely? What's going to happen when we take David and his men into battle? Exactly, right? But again, that response baffles us, Stacy, right? Because he's given an out. My response to that would have been, oh, okay. Thought I'd prove my worth to you, but if there's some distrust or whatever, then we'll just go our way here. His response to it seems odd that he's like almost offended that they're not going to take him with him to go to battle. So, but I appreciate David's comment very much. I appreciate how you summed that up. Anything else along those lines? Yeah, Mark. Good way to look at it. Absolutely. Maybe this is God's hand here. He's the one that's planted this seed of mistrust in them that leads to, convincing Achish, hey, we don't want David and his men to go along with us into this battle. So prevents that from even becoming an issue for David. Sure. Thoughts? Okay. Let's see here. And of course, we see the promise that he makes for him, that he'll make him a bodyguard for life. Verse 3, Samuel's dead, all Israel lamented for him. What a sad chapter for the nation of Israel to lose a man like Samuel, who had God used so effectively to guide, trying to guide Saul, to help David in his youthfulness, and his being exposed to, this is what you're going to be. You're going to be God's called you to be a king over his people. And to have that influence in his life is just really incredible. And so this notion that all Israel lamented, they recognized what the great value and the benefit that Samuel was to the nation of Israel. And then, boy, verse 3 sort of works in, oh, and by the way, Saul had removed from the land those who were mediums and spiritists. We've got to get that put in there before we get to the rest of the context here. And of course, verse 4 has the Philistines gathered. They come to camp in Shunem. Anybody know where Shunem's at? Anybody look that up? I had that somewhere in here. That's verse 4. If you remember, this was land from the tribe of Issachar near the Jezreel Valley, north of Mount Gilboa. And then a side note, I read hometown of Abishag, who was King David's companion in his old age. But when we say the Philistines gathered together and came and camped in Shunem, what is that telling us? What is that telling us about the effectiveness of the Philistines? Where are they? Yeah, they're deep, right? They're in the nation of Israel. This is this constant struggle that the Philistines provided the nation of Israel. And that's what I wrote. They are close. What else gives us an idea of how close they are? Because now Saul's gathered all Israel together for battle, and they are camped in Gilboa. What does verse 5 tell us? Yeah. It says, Saul saw the camp of the Philistines, and as usual, what was Saul's reaction to it? Yeah, when we have looked back earlier in this book where the Spirit of the Lord had departed Saul has lost his way. No longer does he look out there and think, let me inquire of the Lord and see what's to become of this. Oh, we're going to see that that's part of his strategy here. And this just sort of speaks to a little bit of how deluded he is that he knows his condition, yet he's not really willing to admit to it, and he still thinks, hey, I can go to God and God's going to answer me. Stan. Yeah, when we trust in God and we have that relationship with him, there's a certain confidence, right, that we can count on him despite the odds, despite the circumstances, that he's going to be there for us. And that's not the case here. Saul sees it. He sees it through the mortal lens, which says, look at these warriors that we're going to have to go against. And he's afraid. We see that expressed, that he was afraid. His heart trembled greatly. You know, verse 6, Saul inquired of the Lord. So Saul's quick to go, maybe God's there. Maybe God's going to listen. Says he inquired of the Lord. The Lord didn't answer him either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. So there is nothing left available to him as far as a resource that connects him to God that will give him what he wants here. It is interesting that Saul still goes this route. I mean, that what do we make of that? Why is Saul doing this? I can think of a couple reasons he's doing it. What's the primary motivation to do this? Yeah, I mean, he's desperate, right, Ashley? He's like, hey, I need help here. He recognizes that this is probably not going to work out well for us. I need help. And at one time, he could turn to God, right? And he probably thinks about that. Maybe, again, there's all kinds of lessons within lessons. Sometimes when we depart from God, we got that ache in our hearts to go, man, I really wish I had that connection. I wish I could really go to God with this, but I've really turned my back on him. And sometimes we do that to ourselves, and forgetting that God's always wanting us to come back to him and to repent, make our lives right with him. So any other thoughts along those lines? You got to love Saul, right? This isn't gonna stop Saul, right? Because now what's Saul going to do? It's like, well, can't get God to answer me. Saul said to his servants, seek for me a woman who is a medium, and I may go to her and inquire of her. Sort of tell me a little bit, what does that likely tell us about earlier when we read that the land was rid of all these mediums and spiritists? Larry says, not quite, right? Somehow this position, this profession has persisted. Shouldn't surprise us, right? Nation of Israel, they always were challenged with completely ridding themselves of those foreign influences. Seems like that's the case here. The fact that Saul says this also probably is an indication of what? Yeah. Saul was aware of this, at least in my estimation. He's aware that they're still available, you know, in the right situations, the right person. It would seem odd that he would ask his servants to go find someone who he's clearly instructed there to be no more of, right? I think that'd be the case. What else lets us know that this profession's alive and well? Obviously, what lets us know is because there is one. But their response, what does that tell you? Doesn't sound like there's a lot of hesitation from the servants, is there? Oh, funny you should ask. We happen to know one that's in Endor. Sort of gives us an idea of, hey, this is something that's still going on. Shouldn't be going on, but it is still going on. Verse 8 tells us that Saul disguised himself by putting on other clothes, and he went, he and two men with him. What's this idea? Why is there a need for the king to disguise himself in this instance? He's doing something that shouldn't be done, something that shouldn't be right, something that's forbidden. Yeah, so he doesn't want to be implicated in this. He's got those that are closest to him that he could obviously have their lives taken if they speak, but he's doing this on the fly, doing this on the secret. He wants this, but he doesn't want anybody to know that this is the route he's going. And so he goes to her by night. That makes sense. Says to her, conjure up for me, please. Bring up for me whom I shall name to you. I like her response. She's a little leery about this. Why is she leery? You know what Saul's done. Love how she mentions Saul in this, right? This was Saul's edict. Saul was the one that said, make this happen. So she cites him here, how he's cut off those who are mediums and spirits from the land. Why are you then laying a snare for my life to bring about my death? She's concerned, right? This could be this is a sting. You're just waiting for me to admit that this is my profession, this is what I do, so that you can hang me in this, right? That's her response to it. And boy, Saul, here's Saul, right? Verse 10, vow to her by the Lord. Does that strike you as unusual? What's wrong with that statement? Yeah, I mean, not that we needed more recognition of what, you know, what Saul, who he is, but boy, we get it here. You know, first he's inquiring of God, really knowing, likely in the back of his mind, he's not going to answer me, but I'm going to try anyway. And then he's put in this situation, he wants something, he's desperate for it, he's getting resistance. She's like, whoa, wait a minute, there aren't any more medium or spiritists in the land. He vows to her, and this is a statement, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. And then, of course, the woman says, okay, if I've got that assurance, what shall I bring up for you? He wants Samuel. You got to love her response in verse 12. The woman saw Samuel. She cried out with a loud voice. The woman spoke to Saul saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." Anybody have an idea of how suddenly she's aware that he's Saul at this point? Or how about a response? Why is she responding this way? Could be a couple reasons for that. Yeah. But John, she's afraid. Why? Yeah, that's a problem for her for sure. Yes. What else, Sarah?
She's shocked.
Yeah. A great thought. Great thought. The notion that she had success here, I think, is something I wrote in my notes. Maybe this is someone who is known to be a medium, a spiritist, but she's developed this reputation by being sort of crafty, you know, by saying the right thing. Oh, yeah, I see this person, and we have that today, right? There are those that say they can do this same sort of stuff today. They obviously aren't doing it, but they convince desperate people that they are. I think she's genuinely shocked because she's accomplished something that she's really not been capable of doing before, is my estimation. He asked, you know, what do you see? I mean, now Saul's like, oh, what have I done here? What's happening? Asked for his form, says it's this old man's come in a robe, and Saul immediately knows this is Samuel, and he bows his face to the ground and did homage. So he reacts in the right way, the appropriate way. How does Samuel react to being conjured up? Verse 15. Yeah. Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Saul doesn't hesitate. He's got a great answer for him, right? Well, I'm greatly distressed, for the Philistines are waging war against me. God has departed from me. He no longer answers me, either through prophets or by dreams. Therefore, I've called you that you may make known to me what I should do. What's he completely dismissing and discounting here? Makes a great argument. Oh, it's funny you should ask, Samuel. Why am I... I've asked you to be disturbed. I've got plenty of reasons to disturb you. Let me just list them for you. But what's he failing to recognize? This method, right? Is there an issue with the method he's gone about doing this? Well, sure there is. And you love Samuel's immediate response. Here we'll finish this with verse 16 and 17. Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has departed from you and has become your adversary?" Samuel is reminding Saul of the judgment God's already passed, right? The Lord has done accordingly as he spoke through me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, to David. And then he reminds him why. As you did not obey the Lord, did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, so the Lord has done this thing to you this day. And then his final comment, and a sad comment that he makes to Saul in verse 19, "Moreover, the Lord will also give over Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. Therefore, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Indeed, the Lord will give over the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines." Saul wanted to know from the Lord. Ultimately, the Lord allowed that through Samuel being brought up to give him the message, and it's not the message that Saul wanted to hear. It's a very sad ending for him. So thank you for your participation, for your comments this morning.